It's time for overtime.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
In the world of sports, it's all about the playmakers in today's headlines, from locals to the pros, with interviews from local standouts and sports all-stars across the country that will have you talking.
And a drive to right.
From coaches to players, sports analysts, and broadcasters who are a part of the action every day. Overtime, now with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Welcome in to an early and short edition of Overtime. Short and sweet kind of show on the way. We clear the airwaves today at 11:30, making way for those Minnesota Twins who did take a humbling loss yesterday in D.C., 15-2, but that was paled in comparison to the whooping last night for the Minnesota Timberwolves on the road. Game 2 in San Antonio, not one to remember. A 133-95 final. We'll spend some time there, spend some time on the Twins, and also spend a lot of time on those Minnesota Vikings. Dustin Baker across the studio, VikingsTerritory.com, Vikes now on YouTube, and of course, DraftHuddle.com. Pretty darn important this time of year in the wake of the 2026 NFL Draft. What is the biggest roster hole remaining in Minnesota? The Vikings get absolutely positively snubbed. This is from your resident Sioux Falls Viking hater speaking right now. The Vikings get snubbed. They're 24th in the ESPN Power Rankings post-draft. I feel like that is at least 4 to 5 spots too low, and might be even more than that. I would have been okay if somebody had the Vikings as the 16th best team, the 17th best team, but number 24 feels pretty darn disrespectful for the Minnesota Vikings. We'll break those down and so much more. The general manager search is off and running. Vikings are interviewing, chatting with, talking to an external candidate, at least one, and we'll get you an update on that search and so much more in a jam-packed Vikings-themed hour number one. We'll also forecast the remainder of free agency the rest of the way for a Vikings team, Packer team, and more as we conclude hour number one on a Thursday. Hour two, a quick one, headlines and highlights, latest news from the NBA and NHL, and of course, we will squeeze in the good, the bad, the ugly before we're done. Let's head right to the scorecard, where we start out with the good news. The New York Knicks continue to prove exactly what they are: good enough. Karl Anthony Towns, a statistical leader for the first time in what feels like an eternity for the team last night. 20 points, 10 rebounds, 7 assists. Brunson had 26 to lead the team. Knicks get by Philly 108-102. Myron Metcalf says, hey, that's nice, but this is not a Cinderella story. This is just an expectation for New York basketball.
You fired Tibbs because you said he wasn't good enough to get you to the finals. You brought in Mike Brown, who Sacramento had fired, and you said, this is the guy, right? If they don't get to the finals, I mean, this to me is a failure of a season, and it's a failure of a coaching hire, because that's the only task that Mike Brown has. But I'm not going to call the Knicks some underdog. This isn't some Disney movie that we're talking about. They were viewed as a contender coming into the playoffs. They were viewed as a team that maybe should get to the finals. Now here we are. You got to prove it. But they're no underdog.
No underdog indeed, as the Knicks take a 2-0 lead in the series. Again, Karl Anthony Towns, 20 points, 10 rebounds, 7 assists in the win. And then let's get to the stinky one. The nightcap, San Antonio beats the brakes off of Minnesota 133-95. That series tied now, one game apiece. The rebounding disadvantage was one story. San Antonio brought down 55 boards relative to just 43 for Minnesota. But the T-Wolves also had 22 turnovers. Anthony Edwards says his team knows they need to be a lot better moving forward.
We've just been together so long, man. We know each other. We know what we got to do. And, you know, I told the guys after the first game, like, the natural tendency for teams that steal the first game, the away team, they get blown out game two. So we can't come out cool, and we came out cool. And what happened? We got blew out. So, I mean, my mama used to tell me, a hard head make a soft, and that's what happened tonight.
Full of quotes as always, Anthony Edwards. And here is Chris Finch just saying flat out, the other team kicked our butt last night.
Well, I mean, they just kicked our butt in every aspect of the game tonight. So offensively, defensively, it didn't matter. They took it to us, and we didn't really respond very well.
Minnesota looking to play host in Game 3 coming up on Friday night. Full details as we move forward. Let's talk about the cause for concern. It's overreaction night every single day in the NBA playoffs. The waxing and waning of a series. That one was pretty ugly. How much cause of concern is there for Minnesota? Here's Myron Metcalf.
My concern would be it looked like those were two teams in two different clubs. Like, it looked like San Antonio was in that OKC class. Maybe you put New York in there based on how they're playing. Minnesota didn't look like they could keep up. And we just talked about the Detroit Pistons coming back from down 24 against Orlando, and that's setting the tone for Game 7. To me, if you're Minnesota, that has to be the real concern. You just got destroyed. I don't know if anyone cares about Game 1. Yes, it even the series. But what attitude do you have in Game 3 after a loss like that?
It's a good point by Myron Metcalf. As for the winning team last night, Victor Wembanyama on what he said to his team pregame that led to the big performance.
A message. We send lots of message. As a team, we talk a lot. And whether it's for keeping everything tight or motivating, extra motivation to each other, it's always a bunch of dynamics going on. But we're always trying to keep the positivity.
Wembanyama, 19 points, 15 rebounds. Stephon Castle had 21 to lead the Spurs in a 133-95 win. Tonight in the NBA, two games on tap. Cavs at the Pistons, 6 o'clock on Prime Video. Detroit leads 1-0, and they are a 3.5-point favorite on their home floor tonight in Game 2. Lakers and the Thunder from OKC, 8:30 on Prime Video. Thunder lead 1-0, and Vegas says they will be leading 2-0 after tonight, a 15.5-point spread this morning at DraftKings Sportsbook. NHL Stanley Cup playoffs last night. Buffalo doubles up Montreal in their opener 4-2. Sabres lead 1-0. And then Anaheim, redemptive win there following a frustrating Game 1 loss, 3-1. Anaheim wins in Vegas. That series much more interesting now, tied 1-1. Tonight, standalone game, Canes and the Flyers from Philly, 7 o'clock on TNT. The Flyers need a win. They're down 2-0 in the series. Carolina favored -170 on the puck line. Major League Baseball, things did not start too darn shabby yesterday for Minnesota. Here is Matt Wallner as he continues to heat up this season.
And this ball is hit well in the gap left center field. It is flying out of here for Matt Wallner. I think the new approach is taking off as Wallner takes flight to the deepest part of the ballpark in left center. Solo shot for Wally, and the Twins regain the lead 2-1.
And known as one of the biggest bats in the entire battery for Minnesota, Matt Wallner heating up at the right time. That was in the top of the fifth to give the Twins a 2-1 lead. The issue the rest of the way was atrocious for Minnesota. Here's the bottom of the eighth as the Nationals break it open even further with a grand salami.
This ball is clobbered, and this is going to be a grand slam. That ball is in the right field, the grand slam for Abrams. It's 14-2 in favor of the Nationals, and Luis Garcia just gave up a ball that was way up in the stratosphere, and Abrams clears it.
So that was Abrams on the grand slam. That made it 14-2. Final score yesterday, 15-2. One to forget for Minnesota. They fall to 16-21. Manager Derek Shelton on Matt Wallner in the ascension this season.
I mean, we only had three hits, but, I mean, two really good swings. I mean, to see him go backside on a homer like that, hard ground ball for the base hit early on. But that's encouraging, you know, and, you know, we need to get Wally going. So to see, you know, the Sunday game where he had two hits and then today where he had two hits, that's very encouraging.
Twins manager Derek Shelton, Minnesota falling to 16-21. They play again 12:05 this afternoon in D.C. Pre-game coverage right around the corner at 11:30. Other notables yesterday in the AL Central. White Sox lost to the Angels on the road 8-2. Boston blanks Detroit in Detroit 4-0. And then a battle between Cleveland and Kansas City. It was the Guardians with a road win 3-1 yesterday. Again today and tonight, Twins and the Nationals 12:05, 11:30. Your pregame coverage, Guardians at Royals, Reds at Cubs, Mets at the Rockies, Rays at Red Sox, Cardinals at Padres. Those last two games, 6 o'clock and 9 o'clock, both televised on ESPN. Couple reminders as we move off the scorecard from the tennis world. French Open before the end of the month, May 23rd, the opening, and June 7th, the title matches to close out the French Open, and then golf PGA Championship coming up next weekend. Let's hammer across the table to Dustin Baker here on a Minnesota Vikings Thursday edition of Overtime. My friend, maybe not the world's greatest night for Minnesota pro sports last night. They've had some good ones lately. But it's always great to see you. How you doing this week?
Oh, not bad at all. Yeah, the Timberwolves got humbled last night, and that was after they looked so good in game one. So much so, myself included, started to think, did we undervalue the Timberwolves' vast experience in the playoffs? Mm-hmm. It's weird to say that because usually you think of the Timberwolves, you don't think of, you know, deep Western Conference contenders, but they've gotten to, you know, the Western Conference Finals 2 years in a row. So when they smoked the Spurs, or at least took care of business handily, it felt like, gosh, did everybody forget that they have been here and the Spurs have not? And then the Spurs brought that all back to earth pretty quick last night.
Let's talk about your Lakers. I know there's not a whole lot of confidence around there, but I do think they're not playing with house money per se, but that was a nice first round series win. They're up against it against OKC. How much better are the Thunder than everybody right now in your eyes?
They are significantly better. So it looks like we're on a collision course with the Thunder and Spurs and Western Conference Finals, which will, I think, by default be the NBA Finals, if we want to be honest about it. But right now with the Lakers, I kept thinking, when the game was somewhat close for the first three quarters, I kept thinking, with Luka Doncic, this team would have a shot. We're seeing a familiar Austin Reeves in the playoffs, and when I say familiar, I mean not in a good way. He looked like a garbage in last year's playoffs, and so far returning from his injury is not playing well, and when you shoot 3 for 16, trying to beat the best team in basketball, you can't get away with that. So, I mean, they put up a valiant effort. They're 16-point underdogs tonight. They'll need to steal this one to have a chance. And what I kept thinking is, you recall, what, 3, 4, 5 days ago when all of that momentum for Anthony Edwards picked up, like, oh my gosh, he's going to come back and play, you know, 3 weeks early. The Lakers needed that somehow, Luka Doncic, and it's just the opposite. Every time we hear an update from Luka, it's, ooh, we have no idea when he's going to be back. So I never thought the Lakers would win this series, but I still hold out hope that everybody could get hot tonight, and then you get it to 1-1, and then maybe this weekend we'll get some sort of Luka Doncic update that said, hey, if you get it to game five, he'll be back.
It's a lot of NFL news to get to this week. Of course, a lot centered on the Minnesota Vikings GM search latest here later on in the show, but I wanted to ask you a couple things here. First things first, the big quote-unquote breaking news. Pro Football Talk was on it this morning. I put an article up, ESPNSiouxFalls.com. Aaron Rodgers is visiting the Pittsburgh Steelers today, and now according to a source in that article, he is expected to sign with the Steelers this weekend. And then, of course, in conjunction with that, Anthony Richardson still on the trade market. How much of a relief is it for you as a Viking fan to finally possibly maybe close the door on, well, maybe if we get that guy, maybe we could have Rodgers and squeeze something out of him. Maybe we could rekindle and retool Anthony Richardson. Does it make you feel a little warm and fuzzy that you don't have to think about those things?
Yeah, we have an aura right now of quarterback stability, mm-hmm. although most of the NFL outsiders the NFL community wouldn't agree. But one of my favorite things about this Vikings offseason is that it was not hijacked by Aaron Rodgers. And he did that last year, and a lot of that was driven by Diana Russini, mm-hmm. who was huge on Rodgers to the Vikings. And it would have made sense completely to follow the Brett Favre storyline about 4 or 5 years ago. But you know, when we heard the rumors last year that they'd get Rodgers, it would have kept McCarthy on the bench, and we'd still have a big mystery right now about whether or not McCarthy, because he probably wouldn't have played at all last year. Anthony Richardson, I still have high hopes for, but for a head coach in O'Connell, who I think has to probably win this year, or at least get to the playoffs and win a playoff game, you couldn't just roll with Anthony Richardson, J.J. McCarthy, and call it good unless you really had a lot of faith in McCarthy. So I like Anthony Richardson. And I will never understand how Aaron Rodgers can get away with holding a team hostage for 4 months with their quarterback decision-making. Thankfully for the Steelers' sake, I guess they have Drew Aller, and Will Howard there in the room. But, yeah, it's cool that Rodgers will be back in the mix so that the Steelers can go 9-8, mm-hmm. but I'm glad he's not a part of the Vikings discourse.
I got a question for you because I asked this to a coworker this morning because there's a part of me that wants to say, oh my gosh, this is ridiculous. Rodgers is holding him hostage. What a bad person. Oh my gosh, he said this. Can you believe that? There's still a part of me, toxic trait, I guess, as the kids would say, that I love Aaron Rodgers. Mm-hmm. I want him back. I like watching him play still, even though his skills have diminished quite a bit. He's still pretty solid, top half quarterback, arguable top 16, top 14 quarterback in the league. Is there a player surrounding by the Minnesota Vikings that was on the Vikings who left, wanted back, or a guy that you just can't quit that's a long-term Viking player that past or present that you just can't quit, like I can't quit Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah, anytime that Adrian Peterson's shenanigans have popped up in the last 2 years, whether it's DUI or getting in a fight, or basically doing weird things,
mm-hmm.
unlike my usual moral compass, I just say, you know what? Everybody's got something. You know, and I just see, I don't really care. And then to an extent, I do the same thing with Brett Favre, where there's a lot of weird things. Yeah, we share that he has done and the weird, I guess, philosophies that he has that I don't agree with whatsoever. But when I reminisce on the 2009 Vikings season, I completely separate what Favre has, I guess, become in the court of public opinion now. I can watch those highlights and not say, oh, I can't believe he's turned into this. And usually when somebody has done something either strange or something that I fundamentally oppose as a matter of values, I can separate and be like, you know, I'm just not going to subscribe to that person anymore. But with Favre and Peterson, they get a pass. I can remember the good times for football. And with Peterson, I just kind of expect this is who he is now. You're going to continue to have run-ins, but he can't really do a whole lot of wrong in my arm, at least when I look back on, you know, the Vikings history.
And I certainly think that's common. Maybe I'm off base there, but I think it's common in the sports world. You have guys and gals that you root for no matter what, and no matter of destination. I mean, Adrian Peterson went on to play for the Saints, the Cardinals, Commanders, the Lions, the Titans, the Seahawks, and was still pretty darn good for a very long time in his career. We'll dive into some Minnesota Vikings news here in just a moment, but quick look into the revelation of jersey numbers. What can you tell us about that in the Minnesota Vikings? Because there are some interesting jersey number reveals. Kyler Murray's got his jersey number confirmed now for the Minnesota Vikings. What's the latest you can give us on that riveting drama in the Twin Cities?
All right, so jersey numbers K1, go figure, is number one. So Kyler Murray will continue his reign as jersey number one. Probably the most ironic factoid, and bad if you get into superstition, is Caleb Banks is going to wear number 95, which is what Sharif Floyd wore his rookie year. Two defensive tackles, injury prone, from the University of Florida, and they're both wearing the same number. But of course, in the grand scheme of things, that doesn't mean anything. Damon Claiborne has number 21, and I like that number, so I've convinced myself that he's eventually going to be a Pro Bowler. Jake Galladay got number 41. I was talking to a friend of the show, Yannick Eckhart. You kind of want your white defensive players to have weird numbers. That means that, you know, they're aesthetically going to break out. And then Big Citrus, Dominic Orange, is number 97, so he'll carry on the Everson Griffin tradition in the Twin Cities.
And again, if you don't know this top of mind, this is not a quiz show by any means, but number 88 for Minnesota, that's what Banks wore in college. That would be a little odd for him to wear that on the D-line, but all the number rules are all wacky.
You can't. Who wears?
Okay, so gotcha. So it is occupied.
Already taken.
Gotcha.
And then Jacoby Thomas, who is the fruit of the Jonathan Grenard trade, at least the first part of it, he's wearing number 8. Which was Kirk Cousins' number, and then Jeff Okuda last year. So maybe Jacoby Thomas can do something sweet with a single digit.
All right. So I have one final opinion before we dive into break about jersey numbers. This comes from coaching some high school football, playing some high school football. Because in high school, in North Carolina, you can wear any number anywhere, just kind of like we see in the NFL nowadays. Do you think rookies should be able to wear single digits in their first year? Because to me, in high school, it was always, hey, you got to earn that. You got to be a team captain. You got to be a stud to wear number 1, number 2, number 3, number 9, the really cool numbers as a linebacker that you want as a senior, and you want all the kids out there wearing that jersey. Am I off base there? Because the Packers have Micah Parsons wearing a single digit. He deserves it. They've got Matthew Golden wearing 0, which is a super cool uniform for a guy that hasn't really done too much. And then they got Brandon Cisse wearing number 2, which looks really cool. Am I off base with kind of guarding out these cool numerals as the jersey numbers for the guys that have been there, done that, done something for your team?
I don't think as a matter of principle that you're off base, but I think realistically, when a rookie gets to his new team, almost, let's see, that would usually about 60 to 70% of the numbers are already spoken for. So when Jacoby Thomas, for example, gets to choose, he doesn't have an infinite number. He has a whittled down selection of only what safeties can use. So it's not his problem that Jeff Okuda didn't re-sign with the Vikings. So when you have a limited number of options for jersey numbers, I don't blame these guys for saying, hell yes, number 8, give me that.
And I will tell you too, Matthew Golden, I don't know if you remember this, but when he came out, he was drafted by the Packers, had the great appearance on stage, and the next day came out and he says, I'm going to wear number 22. That was his initial jersey number selection. Thank goodness he changed to 0, but there are a lot of Matthew Golden rookie cards from last season wearing number 22. I'm glad that that changed to number zero for Matthew Golden. We keep on moving on this Minnesota Vikings Thursday edition of Overtime. Coming up next, latest Vikings news dump of the week. The snub in the offseason power rankings. How dare they rank the Vikings so low at number 24. First look at the rookies, UDFA class, and more in Minnesota. Everything you need to know from Vikings territory coming up next on this Thursday edition of Overtime.
One. Overtime is in the middle of your workday. Unwrap your sandwich and get caught up with Bert Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Right back with you on this Thursday, May 7th edition of Overtime. I just came out of the break right before slipping on the headset and told Dustin Baker, hey, we're talking Vikings here. Really? It's Vikings Thursday, hour number one. Of course we're talking Vikings. Got to self-scout every now and then. Thursday, May 7th edition of Overtime. Let's talk Vikings, shall we? In hour number one, what's the latest Vikings news we need to know? I know there's a lot of former Vikings in the news, Stephon Diggs and others. Mm-hmm. What do we need to know this week in Vikings territory?
Well, the first thing you need to know is me correcting the record so I don't sound like a casual. Number 88 was Alan Page. Carl Eller was 81. So I think the biggest news items in the Vikings orbit this week, foremost, was a non-news item that tried to be. There was an article in Pioneer Press, St. Paul's newspaper, where Charlie Walters said that because the Vikings didn't spend much during free agency, they might be for sale. The owners might be finally putting their foot down and saying, you know, we're not spending very much. And it just never didn't make sense one iota. It was immediately debunked by the who's who of NFL reporting. And I don't know why it got to that point. Like, this is what happens. The Vikings spent big time in the first, let's see, three off seasons of Kwesi Adofe-Mensah's employment. And like last year, you can't keep spending oodles of dollars in free agency without getting into absolute salary cap hell and kicking the can down the road. Like, if the Vikings wanted to sign a bunch of free agents back in March, they would have had to backload those contracts with cap hits in 2028, 2029, 2020, or 2030. And they said, we're not doing that. So there was this, like, Saturday, Sunday rumor that the Vikings could be for sale. Mm-hmm. And that was just not true. The other thing is no major smoke came off the Juwan Jennings visit. There was a piece from, I think, Albert Breer that said that Jennings wants WR2 money, which would explain why he hasn't been signed anywhere. Mm-hmm. He's never had over 1,000 yards in a season, but legitimate WR2 money is like $23, $24 million, like Devonta Smith type of thing. Vikings don't have that laying around. If they did, they would have given it to Jonathan Grenard. So we're kind of at an impasse with Juwan Jennings to see if that price number will come down. Which leads me to Stephon Diggs, who was acquitted of strangulation and assault. Mm-hmm. One of the fastest celebrity trials I've ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. Like, that story, I think, kicked up dust in January, and he's already cleared of it, you know, in early May. But the reason that I bring this up is because, in theory, the Vikings need a WR3, and if they can't get Juwan Jennings, or they don't want Deebo Samuel, DeAndre Hopkins, or Brandon Ayuk stays somehow in San Francisco, Diggs would be an option because he started his career at the Vikings. And the guy was productive last year, 1,013 yards, I think four touchdowns, 85 catches, and the Patriots just didn't re-sign him. So I would keep an eye on Diggs as a backhanded Vikings option if his free agency remains quiet. And then a couple more things. We're right in the middle of this general manager search, which is funny to me because last week the Vikings owners released a statement that said that we're going to have a private process for out of respect for the candidates. And then this week, all of a sudden, it's like, all right, they're talking to Terrence Gray from the Buffalo Bills. So I guess we're going to get leaks, even though the Vikings won't confirm or deny that they're talking to those certain people. Rob Brzezinski remains the front runner, I think. But then they have the Wilfs have this search firm that is running the show for them. So right now, I'm probably at about 60-40 that Brzezinski will keep the big job. I think I made my feelings clear on that last week on your show that I would probably just keep him and let the triangle of authority with Kevin O'Connell, Brzezinski, and the Vikings owners ride this thing out to figure out how far O'Connell could take it. And then after we got off air last week, Bert, the Vikings signed a depth defensive tackle named Eric Johnson, who's kind of a, not quite a journeyman, but he's a reserve guy that he'll battle for a roster spot at training camp.
So that's the latest Vikings news. Follow along, VikingsTerritory.com. As we dive into that receiver debate, that's going to be up for debate here. Free agent forecast the rest of the way, as well as big needs for Minnesota. I think it's no secret, wide receiver three, a future wide receiver two, maybe, if Addison leaves after next season, 2027. Maybe that'll be in the works. Which one of those receivers, Juwan Jennings, Brandon Ayuk, Stephon Diggs, DeAndre Hopkins, all those names you mentioned, is there one of them that you say, I really want that guy, please sign him today, or are you feeling pretty patient in this process?
I'm patient because there's about six guys that are all old. Like, I challenge anybody, if you're bored and you're a football fan, go try to find a 27-year-old free agent wide receiver on the open market. They don't exist. Like, they're flat out gone. Or if they are, they're dudes you never heard of or don't care about. Like, all of the main guys that you're going to sign right now are going to be Stephon Diggs, Keenan Allen, DeAndre Hopkins, Deebo Samuel, maybe Brandon Ayuk, Juwan Jennings, who's going to be 29. They're all either going to be 29 or older. So if they start flying off the market one by one and then the Vikings have zilch, none, then I'll be like, really? We couldn't just sign one of them? Then I'll be melancholy. But for right now, if I had to pick, and let's assume that Brandon Ayuk won't be easy to get, like there's going to be some sort of hassle to get him because he's the best one right now, let's face it, so long as he's not disgruntled or not washed already. Deebo Samuel would be the most fun for me because the Vikings really haven't used a running back in like his Percy Harvin-like build where you can give him the ball and he can rush it out of the backfield. I think that dude has like 20-something career rushing touchdowns, which is incredible. So the cool part is there are three San Francisco 49ers wide receivers that are in the mix. Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, and Juwan Jennings. And there's a philosophical overlap between Kevin O'Connell's offense and Kyle Shanahan's. So I think any three of those guys would work in Minnesota. It's just a matter of whether of who they sign. And then if you want the Kyler Murray reunion with DeAndre Hopkins, that could work. But I think we've all seen that he's limited. I think he'd be more of a red zone target. The other thing is you could decide that you actually want to target TJ Hockenson again and not use him as your sixth offensive lineman. And then if you decided that, hey, we're going to target TJ Hockenson like a WR3, then you really wouldn't need to go find somebody like Deebo Samuel. So I think my endorsement was see what Deebo Samuel's asking price would be.
Certainly Juwan Jennings, that feels like the Dalton Risner of this offseason. Hey, we visited with him. We really like him. He really likes us. We're going to talk later. I think they're going to get Juwan Jennings personally later this offseason. If not, though, it's going to be interesting come training camp time, the cuts that are made, the guys that are, hey, we're going to release this guy if we can't find a trade partner. One name to watch for Minnesota would be Xavier Leggett in Carolina. That's a guy that is going to be pushed down the depth chart if he doesn't ascend into some new stratosphere. And that could be one of many cut candidates, trade candidates that Minnesota should look out for.
I would love for them to find a way to get Jerry Jeudy, who now is deprioritized in Cleveland because they used first and second round draft capital on KC Concepcion, if I said that right, and Denzel Boston. And let's face it, unless Jameis Winston was playing for the Browns, Jeudy wasn't getting very many targets in the first place. So that's been my grand idea for about 6 weeks, is send a fifth rounder or whatever it takes to the Browns and get Jerry Jeudy.
Let's talk about power rankings of all the offseason storylines. This is a big-time offseason one. Post-draft power rankings, this shocked me. I was expecting to say, come on, of course the Vikings are ranked 16th. And I would probably agree with that. They were ranked 24th in ESPN's power rankings. How disrespectful is that? I would say the ceiling floor for Minnesota would be 15 to 20, 21, but to be 24, that surprised me quite a bit.
Well, if you want to be even more offended, or in your case, elated, go to NFL.com and Eric Edholm's rankings. They have the Vikings at 28, fifth worst team in football.
Jeez.
So I really don't care because power rankings are just a thermometer of public opinion. Like, it's just fuel. It's, you know, you put it on the bulletin board right now and say these sons of guns think that we're the fifth worst team in football, or in ESPN's case, that'd be the ninth worst team in football. What I struggle to reconcile, like, even if it makes me roll my eyes, is the Vikings, not exaggerating, folks, had the NFL's third best defense by DVOA and EPA per play. You can't have the third best defense in the league and have an absolutely crappy football team. Like, something's got to give. And we forget that this team finished 9-8 last year. I have to remind myself of that. It felt like they finished 6-11 based on our expectations. So they're starting from this baseline of a winning season. They had the third best defense last year. They added Kyler Murray, and they still employ Justin Jefferson. Like, the only argument that can be made to say, hey, they're probably not going to live up to what you think, Dustin, is that they're playing inside the NFC North, which is going to be a murderer's row once again. But I do not understand how NFL.com would rank the Vikings at 28, nor do I think the 24 in ESPN is very respectful. I would say, I haven't done mine yet, but if I do mine, I'm guessing I end up right around 17, 18, or 19, depending on my mood that day.
ESPN has teams like the Giants, the Panthers, Steelers, Colts, Commanders ahead of Minnesota immediately. Also Tampa Bay, Cincinnati. Other area teams, you got the Chicago Bears in the top 10 at number 9, Lions 11, Chiefs 12. Packers are at 7, and the most surprising thing in the entire rankings to me is that the Denver Broncos are the third best team in the entire NFL. Right now, according to ESPN.com, this is also a nerdy topic, but your first look at rookie draft picks. What draft pick are you most excited to see in uniform coming up this weekend for rookie minicamp in Minnesota?
All right, so most excitement for me is going to be a dark horse, and I'm a broken record on this show week in and week out. It's a Damon Claiborne, because I am really confused about how good he can be, and I usually don't feel this way about anything regarding football. Because he has a smaller stature that indicates, yeah, usually if you're a running back and you want to blossom into an RB1, you probably want to be usually about 200 pounds. That's kind of like a cutoff. If you're lighter than that, you might be used as a gadget or situationally.
Yeah, or an outlier, yeah.
Yeah. So with Damon Claiborne, he has the speed at 4.37. That's what he ran at the combine. He has the measurables of Devon Achane. He has Devon Achane's offensive coordinator working for the Vikings now. So my big curiosity is, are we going to get somebody that's like Nyheim Hines, who we're just going to see him, you know, every now and then on third downs and for fun, for vibes? Or can Damon Claiborne ultimately turn into an RB1? Like I said, he has the speed for it, and I think he just turned 22 or 23, so it's not like we have an old Seth McGowan from Kentucky who will be 25 or 26 by the time the season cuts off. The other one I'm curious about, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on this because you're a draft Nick, is the Vikings traded Jonathan Greenard. We get that. They drafted no replacement edge rusher, and they haven't signed Jadeveon Clowney or Leonard Floyd or any of those guys. Is there a world where that Jake Galladay pick, where he gets used as Brian Flores' version of an outside linebacker? Because I think when he was in junior college at Central Arkansas, I believe, I know he was used as an edge rusher, but they moved him at Cincinnati to inside linebacker. So the longer we go without the Vikings signing Joey Bosa or Von Miller or any of those 30-something, you know, aged veteran edge rushers that, you know, can get you 6 sacks per season, is there an outside chance, and we'll learn more about this as we see the setup this week and probably training camp, is there a chance that the Vikings consider Brian Flores, is he considered Jake Galladay an edge rusher?
We'll wait and see. I would say not likely, but my initial inkling also is the other linebackers that are the off-ball guys, Ivan Pace, Eric Wilson, those guys are not going to be rushing the passer anytime soon. Mm-hmm. So maybe Galladay slides into that role as a situational guy, an additional body on the football field. We'll wait and see. Let's talk UDFAs also on the same question. Have you gotten a little bit more of a foothold? You know, in years past, we talked Logan Brown, Joe Huber. Yeah. We talked Bo Richter. We talked the Tyler Batty kid a couple years ago, too, about people that we want to see and people that can make this roster. Have you gotten a little bit more of a foothold on this year's class? Are there any names that really excite you this year? And if so, who are they?
Yeah, and based on that roll call you just rattled off, we're usually pretty good at this. Yep. Logan Brown was a miss, but the other guys that we forecasted at this time on the calendar ended up making the Vikings regular season roster. And I'm sure that applies to the Packers as well. Yeah, I'll name off four really quickly. Only for the namesake, people are going to know who Scooby Williams is because his nickname or his first name is Scooby, Texas A&M linebacker. That's all I'm mentioning. I don't know if he's actually good or not. Last week we talked about Brett Thorson. So if you care about punters and special teams, that guy is really legitimately going to battle Johnny Hecker this summer for the job. I learned on accident this week that Brett Thorson did not hold field goals and extra points at Georgia. So that might be a problem. I don't know if you can learn that in a summer. We shall see. But he's going to be there battling Hecker, and he's supposed to be one of the best punters collegiately in the country. Dylan Bell, you continue to hear chirps about him. Steve Smith is high on him. Kirby Smart, his coach at Georgia, says, you know, he's a do-it-all type of thing. So we talked a few minutes ago about Deebo Samuel and Percy Harvin. Dylan Bell is a guy who could recreate that to an extent in a UDFA capacity if the Vikings wanted a weapon like that. And so long as this wide receiver room stays skimpy behind Jefferson and Addison, you're going to have to study UDFAs and stuff because that's all you got. And then the other guy I'll continue to point out every week on your show is Cameron Stewart. He's an edge rusher from Temple. And it's the same, I think, mindset right here. If you don't have anybody credible after Andrew Van Ginkel and Dallas Turner, then you have to study the guys you have. And Stewart stands off the page. I think he's already 24 or 25 years old, hence, you know, going undrafted. He's a guy that should be more game ready than most. And he fits right in line with Bo Richter, Tyler Batty, undrafted guys who are old.
You know, it's been a very nerdy topic for a while, us talking about UDFAs. But over the last few years, Minnesota has absolutely made some hay in that category, including Dwight McLaughlin. We've also talked about Ivan Pace a lot. He was a UDFA. Minnesota's absolutely cleaned up in that respect. Post-draft over the last couple of seasons, we'll see. As we move forward into the offseason, Vikings rookie minicamp coming up tomorrow and Saturday over this weekend. When we come back, the latest update on the Vikings general manager search, what to know about the external candidate they've been talking to, also broad NFL news, a free agent forecast the rest of the way, and so much more. We continue with Vikings Thursday coming up next right here on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO.
You want more of Overtime? Free with the app or online at ESPN Sioux Falls. Overtime with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO.
Right back with you on this Minnesota Vikings Thursday edition of Overtime. The Minnesota Vikings are in need of a general manager. They have one in the interim general manager, Rob Brzezinski, right now. They have contacted at least one external candidate. And Dustin, correct me if I'm wrong here. Are there any other names? Give me grammar down here. Are there any other names out there that have been linked to the Minnesota Vikings that they have contacted, interviewed? Because it feels pretty darn quiet so far, early stages of the search.
Well, based on what we talked about in the first segment, where the Wilfs said this is going to be a closed-door search, like in 2022, when they had the general manager search, they had like, hey, you know, Jake Davis has interviewed with the Vikings. They're not doing that this time. So I think all we're going to get is leaks. That's why we got Terrence Gray, who's the only known outsider right now. So when we heard that they're getting somebody outside the current tree, we're like, well, good for them, because everybody that has been rumored thus far is somebody who used to work in the Vikings front office. Mm-hmm. There's also this dirty little option of Ryan Grigson, who no fan likes because I think they hold him accountable for Andrew Luck's retirement when Grigson ran the Colts. So it feels like a very internal search right now with the recent expansion to Terrence Gray, who is currently in the Bills front office. And then I'll reiterate for anybody that wasn't listening at the top of the show that Rob Brzezinski probably remains the favorite because of his experience. You're not going to find a dude that has been with the Vikings or really any franchise for 27 years. They don't grow on trees. I think we'll have a verdict on this within the next 2 weeks. And then, you know, you'll set sail on minicamp and training camp and either have Brzezinski again or a new official general manager.
Let's talk about the Terrence Gray. That's the name, correct? In Buffalo Bills. He is linked to the Vikings in the past. I think he spent a lot of time as a scout for Minnesota, if I'm not mistaken. Your preference is Rob Brzezinski. We made that clear earlier in the show. But if it is Gray, what kind of warm fuzzies does it give you, at least that it's not a brand new rip out the page, start over? It's a guy with some continuity with the organization, and he knows kind of the expectation and the overall feeling of the Vikings already.
Well, I want to make sure I make it clear that whoever they end up hiring, I'll be like, all right, good. Like, let's do it. Like, I'm not going to be like, what do you mean you didn't hire Rob Brzezinski? Because there's this ongoing joke that I have as a Vikings writer that often when you are writing about general manager candidates, you feel like you're BSing because you're like, all right, this guy worked for the Seahawks. His boss drafted some good players. He went to college, drafted some more. Like, you don't have a tangible tape of what these guys have done. You have where they worked and who their boss drafted. So it's the same thing that we went through in 2022. Like, you saw that Kwesi came from the 49ers organization that was a habitual winner. He was the money ball guy. Let's give it a shot. If it is a guy with ties to the Vikings, it won't surprise me, and I won't be mad about it. I also think that if it is not Brzezinski, they might find some sort of org chart that is different than most, where Brzezinski is still heavily involved in everything, and then the new guy just has the official, maybe figurehead title of general manager. So I certainly would not, it's like, Rob Brzezinski is not going to be unemployed by the end of the summer because he didn't get the job. I don't think that's going to happen one bit. That leads me to believe that Brzezinski's fingerprints will be all over this team for years to come.
Minnesota Vikings still have a manageable amount of salary cap space. According to Spotrac right now, they have about $16.5 million, ranks 21st in the NFL. So they could go shopping. Maybe it's Juwan Jennings. We saw Thor Nystrom. There's a video out this week. 1 year, $12 million is what he pitched on the deal for Juwan Jennings. If you wanted to MacGyver the cap a little further, might want to do a multi-year deal. We'll see what Juwan Jennings is in the market for. On the wish list, wide receiver 3, we talked to edge rusher Jadeveon Clowney and others that might be available. Is there another need that comes to mind? Because you look at the depth chart right now in Minnesota, and the two big holes are really there. Depth at pass rusher, and then, of course, wide receiver 3. Ty Felton is on the roster. He should be the guy, and I'm banging the table for Ty Felton out of Maryland, but apparently they're still looking for people. They're bringing in Juwan Jennings. What is the bigger need? And give me a forecast. Is there any other names that we're not mentioning in those?
So there really is not another position that needs a single free agent. And that's really weird to say. That means the depth chart is in a good spot. I actually learned a lot last weekend, last Friday. I wrote an article that ranked the Vikings roster by position groups. And that taught me that this roster is in good shape. The weakest position, in my opinion, is running back. And it's kind of weird to say out loud because the running backs are pretty good, Aaron Jones and Jordan Mason. So I will say that there really is no dark horse. Like, I mean, they could always use another cornerback, but who couldn't? But I compare it to last year when they had Byron Murphy Jr., Isaiah Rodgers, and Jeff Okuda. That was it. This year it's Byron Murphy Jr., Isaiah Rodgers, James Pierre, and Charles Dimmings, and Dwight McLaughlin. So they also have that depth. The reason that these Vikings need another wide receiver and another edge rusher is, what happens if Jordan Addison snaps his ACL this summer? What happens if Dallas Turner breaks his arm? Then you're going to hit panic mode, and you're going to have to trade for somebody, probably overpay like you did for Adam Thielen last summer, or you're going to have to hope the scraps of free agency, like you're down to the ghost of Von Miller as somebody who's going to start, not just be an OLB3. So I would say, based on those two spots, I would roll with wide receiver because I would trust Brian Flores to figure something out if one of his edge rushers went down, whereas you would have, let's say Addison's hurt. It'd be Justin Jefferson, Jordan, or it'd be Justin Jefferson, Ty Felton, and Miles Price as your wide receiving core. So it leads me to believe that there is another wide receiver on the way, and we just need to be a little patient.
We're going to have all offseason to talk about this, and I'm sure I'll throw it in the hopper in July and August as we get closer and get some camp observations and more. Most important Vikings on the offense and defense, I think you just alluded to two of them. Jordan Addison's pretty important. Dallas Turner might be the answer. Most important Viking in 2026 in terms of what they need him to be, who they're asking him to be on the football field. Are there other names that come to mind? Kyler Murray is in the conversation too, obviously. Most important Vikings coming up for the season. Who makes the list? You can give me, I don't know, two, three, four of these guys.
Okay. Anytime we do this exercise, I just cross off the quarterback because that's captain obvious. Like, the quarterback's going to be important. The guy who touches the ball, you know, 60 times a game is going to affect the outcome more often than not. I would say on offense, the guy who matters the most because you invested so much Skrilla in him is Will Fries. Last March, so what are we looking at, 14 months ago, you gave that guy a large contract, 4 years, and was it 80, I think 70 or something, 80 or something million. The good news is if he's just mediocre again, the guaranteed money will be done, and you could basically move on next year. But life will just be easier if Will Fries is good. They signed him based on a 6 or 7 game sample in 2024 when he thoroughly cooked with the Indianapolis Colts. And then he broke his leg. So I was apprehensive at the time that, God, do we have enough you know, evidence there that he's going to be good. But I figured, well, if they're going to spend that much money, they know better than me. And then he showed up last year and was just completely mediocre. That would be the guy on offense. I think on defense, we are looking at a Vikings team that said goodbye to Javon Hargrave and Jonathan Allen. I already know Jalen Redmond's going to be good. He's shown that consistency. That leads me to our fancy new rookie, Caleb Banks. Now, I'm really, my fingers are crossed that we don't spend the next 4 months doing this injury watch on Caleb Banks. That will really get on my nerves. Like, I want to see a tweet from somebody in like 2 weeks that says Caleb Banks is ready to go, and, you know, he's going to be a full go this summer. I don't want to, you know, play games where we're like, oh my God, is he going to be even seen at training camp? But he is important because you have stripped away 1,300 defensive tackle snaps between Hargrave and Allen, and you're replacing them with your round one rookie. So you already have a guy that the Vikings reached for on the consensus big board. So you have to put him on a path to prove whether or not he was worth a first rounder, and you have to replace two veteran defensive tackles. One factoid, I sent you a text message of this a few minutes ago in case we had a chance to talk about it, is heading into this offseason, the Vikings, by most metrics, had one of the oldest rosters in the NFL. By shedding Harrison Smith for now, he isn't back, and by getting rid of two defensive tackles, all of a sudden the Vikings rank as a top eight team per youth, believe it or not, because the guys that they drafted are projected to start, like Dominic Orange.
And Green Bay adds Javon Hargrave, and now they're out of the cellar. But I got to tell you, I'm tired. You're tired of certain narratives around your team. I'm tired of the, we're the youngest team in football. That's the reason we're the seventh seed. That's the reason we lost in the first round again for the Green Bay Packers. Another fun-filled week of Vikings talk here on a Thursday. Dustin, always great to have you. We'll do it again in a week.
Yeah, man, we'll talk to you then.
All right. A lot of fun there. Minnesota Vikings Thursday. Always ability to listen back. Grab the podcast at the top of the hour. Just a few moments. I'll click this fancy button. It will be published wherever you get your podcasts, ESPNSiouxFalls.com or on the free ESPN Sioux Falls mobile app. Take a break. Come back with just a half hour left of the show. Headlines and highlights, NBA, NHL chatter. And of course, we always have time for the good, the bad, the ugly, brought to you by the place that's going to help you not have a bad or ugly lawn this year. That is Lewis Drug, Lewis Lawn and Garden. Check them out this weekend, every week in the lead up to the warming season. Hopefully, nice, beautiful, big weekend ahead. Lewis Drug, a place to go to get your lawn, home, and garden straightened out. We'll dive right into headlines and highlights when we come back on this Thursday, May 7th edition of Overtime.